Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the Macro Insights podcast where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Scott Bennett, also known as Invest With Rules. He's got 16 years of experience at Fidelity with the big dogs in all of this hubbub that's going around. He's seen a lot of things going on. I don't want to date you too much here, Scott, but President Trump not too long ago said that if we're going to continue down the path that we're going, that we could see a 1929 level Great Depression here in the near future. Seems like he's kind of prepping us for the worst, Scott. So where do you think we're at? And do you think there's a possibility that we're going to see a 1929 level Great Depression?
Yeah, for Brandon, first, so happy to be here. Thanks for having me join you today. Certainly, yeah, pretty big headline, right? I mean, that's pretty massive. And when I look at the market today in particular, or more recently, I would say the macro backdrop is you still have economic growth, you still have GDP growth, which is great. But the other side of the spectrum, which the market has been, I would politely not enjoying, is inflation is slowly coming back. And the question there leads to a lot of uncertainty in regards to President Trump's information in regards to all of the policies that are going to be coming over the next few months. But really, it's the inflation factor that has put uncertainty back into this marketplace. At Invest With Rules, we follow a lot of data and we follow math and we try to distill it all down. And the very first way we do that is called the market health score. So a really, really strong uptrending market is a 10, and a really miserable market that you try to avoid is a 0. And we're actually a 4. So a 4 out of 10. And part of the reason for that is we look at the US markets and the international markets. In particular, the US markets are on what we would consider a coast signal at the moment, deteriorating quickly. So short-term trend is down now, and the long-term trend is still up. So if you kind of take a step back, big picture, we're still kind of trudging along. But the question of all questions that I think is super important is, are we potentially at this pivotal moment, a topping type pattern? We call it a coast, where it's like, be cautious, be on alert. The international markets have already rolled over. So I'm going to say that in general, we've built cash in our newsletter and our advisory service. And full disclosure, please always manage your own personal situation and your financial plan. But we are starting to get more and more defensive. And we're going to patiently wait to say, is this a buy the dip opportunity? But we're being cautious, is what I would tell you.
Yeah, that's all great information there, Scott. But the thing that stuck out to me was you mentioned GDP about an increase. Part of GDP is government spending. I mean, we've been sending billions over to Ukraine. We're sending money everywhere, all over the place. So it seems like, although, you know, GDP is increasing, part of that seems to be because of the money printing, and it also would be almost inflationary to send money across borders and things like that. So when you're looking at these different data points, whether it's GDP, CPI, whatever's being reported, how much do you take into weight of the potential that some of these numbers are being manipulated? I mean, we can go through how looking at CPI, that basket of goods has changed multiple times since we got off the gold standard, but most recently, early last year. So with all that, like, how are you looking at the governmental data that they're putting out, and how much weight do you put into, you know, the potential of this data being manipulated?
That's a really good question. And the way I think through it is, whether it is or it isn't, what I look at is the rate of change of the data. So I think that's the key to kind of cutting through the hardship. If you were to look at inflation back in the 1980s during that gold standard, you would say this inflation number doesn't make any sense. When I go to the grocery store, when I go to the toy store to buy my son, a five-year-old, a toy, it is insane how much everything costs. And I would certainly say that the rate of change is slowly ticking up since September of 2024. And because of that, whether you're looking at CPI, you're looking at PPI, you're looking at the Fed's favorite, the PCE number, which we're going to get a lot of that data coming out relatively soon, that is ticking up. And what that's simply doing is the bond market hates it. And the bond market seeing yields skyrocket and the interest rates or the price of the bonds fall. So in full disclosure, we do not own any fixed income in our strategies today. For that sole purpose is we follow three core principles. We follow the trend, we follow big money, and we follow risk management rules. And if you simply look at the trend of fixed income, they are screaming that even though the Fed lowered rates by 1 or 100 basis points, the bond market just threw it back up 100 basis points. So I would tell you that the bond market is saying, we don't buy it. We think inflation's higher than it actually is. And that's now sending shockwaves through to the stock market.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. And, you know, I think the average person is not dumb, Scott. I think the average person feels a lot of things. They can be a little bit observant here, right? And, you know, part of that is, like you said, with the inflationary risks. Now, with that being said, the CPI reported is like 2.5 to 2.8, which is under that 3% mark. You know, it's not super far off, at least on paper, to that 2% target that the Fed targets. But if you look at, like I stated a little bit earlier, the way that the basket of goods was in 1980s, that number's still over 10% as of September of last year. So, you know, the average person's still feeling inflation. Retail's definitely still feeling inflation, but it seems like traditional finance is saying everything's peaches and daisies here. So, you know, what's going to crack here? And what is it going to take for either the Fed to have extreme inflationary concerns, whether they cut interest rates at an extremely rapid rate, or, you know, are they going to try to keep inflation under wraps by keeping everything down, by, you know, keeping interest rates at a higher level? Because we all know President Trump likes his 0% interest rates. So how do you see this playing out here, Scott?
Yeah, so I'm going to share it through the lens of trend. And what I would simply say is the Fed just recently changed their marker. So we were anticipating around 1 to 2 rate cuts in 2025. And now it's down to 1, and almost now it's down to 0. So when we look at what the Fed's going to do to make money cheaper, the answer is they're on hold at the moment. And the market, the bond market has screamed that. The stock market has now pulled back roughly 5%. So you're kind of heading into that pullback territory, not a correction, not a bear market, but you're getting into this worry area. And then the question then is, okay, well, what's the Fed going to do moving forward? And then the answer there is, okay, they're going to be quasi data dependent, but we're looking at, are they actually going to potentially lower rates this year? And the answer right now is possibly not. And the market despises that. So you're looking at, okay, well, how do they balance this? And so Trump comes in. We know that the major Trump initiatives are going to be around taxes. We have his 2017 tax reform is probably not going to sunset now that he's reelected. So that's really important. We have, in general, we're going to see more pro-business in the United States. So bring business back to the states. So the world of tariffs, whether they're going to really be impactful, that could trigger significant inflation if it's more than just a negotiating tool. And then finally, you're looking at, okay, well, what are they going to do with immigration reform? And is it just simply going to be more drastic or more muted? And I think all of that is leading us to this environment of, I know it sounds wild, but the consumer's still there. The earnings growth is still there. So the growth engine is still slowly growing, which Trump must love. But the inflation factor, that's going to be the challenge of how is he and Jerome Powell of the Fed going to balance everything together? And how, I guess I'll kind of pose it as a how, but how are they going to put initiatives through when you have this massive deficit ball where there's $1 trillion of interest expense on the deficit today? And Scott Bessent is going to be coming into the Treasury. And I believe the House and the Senate is not mentally prepared for a lot more stimulative action that's going to cause more debt. So then the question is, okay, well, we take a step back. We look at the trend. The trend is telling us right now that the US dollar is incredibly strong. And that's what's putting a lot of pressure on the risk markets. So outside of leaving cash, so that's putting pressure on things like stocks, putting pressure on bonds, putting pressure recently on Bitcoin. I'm sure you've been feeling that across you and your world as well. How does that feel to you, Brandon?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to be honest, like if you have a long-term outlook, I think, you know, the Bitcoin market is feeling it in a little different ways, right? I mean, we saw Bitcoin go from 60 to over 100K since November of this year. So crashing down to 90 is not a major concern of mine. I'm more looking at like the general market and kind of seeing some of the signals from there because, you know, when you said, you know, the Fed might not necessarily cut interest rates, that usually gets dumped into risk on assets. That usually means the S&P 500 and the assets are going to heavily, you know, inflate over time. And in 25, part of my thesis, I need to get onto writing here, Scott. So maybe this conversation is going to push me there. But part of my thesis of 25 is that we're going to see a major asset inflation bubble. We're going to see real estate. We're going to see stocks. We're going to see everything start to skyrocket because the Fed's going to cut interest rates. Inflation isn't under wraps. And part of that is going to be because President Trump is going to be really pushing that when it comes to Jerome Powell, who's got 2 years left in his term. Now, Powell also cites Volcker, right, as his seemingly, I guess, idol, what he looks to as a Fed chair. Now, how is he going to be able, because I mean, I think to be honest, no matter who got elected, there was going to be pressure to lower interest rates. So, you know, with that being said, do you honestly, like, realistically think that he's going to be able to not have an interest rate cut here in 2025? Because to me, I mean, if I was a betting man, hey, I like to place a wager here or there, I would bet that he cuts interest rates at least a couple times this year, maybe even upwards of four plus. Depending on, you know, how much each of those cuts happen. So, do you realistically think that there's a way that Powell is going to be able to avoid cutting interest rates here in 25?
Okay, so it's the lesser of two evils. So it's a really good point. And if, let's just say hypothetically, we get your four rate cuts, which is we got three in 2024. If we got four rate cuts in 2025, you will see the animal spirits come back. This little consolidation is going to be nothing, and the market is going to rip higher. So the market expectation is not there today. So that is not baked in. So how I would expect that is stocks have a kind of a projected earnings through a multiple, and that multiple is based on interest rates. So if we project out what we think a stock could do a few years out, we use a discounting method with an interest rate factor. Right now, that factor has been climbing, and it's in essence sending that multiple, and it's contracting. So if we look at the year 2025, the S&P 500 is projected to have a roughly 10% earnings growth. So 10% plus the 1% dividend. So could the market do a little over 10% this year? That's possible. Now, if interest rates keep skyrocketing and the rate of borrowing keeps going up as well, that's going to put pressure on that PE, that price to earnings multiple. And maybe you don't get that 11%. You don't get that. The last 2 years has been this kind of really rosy market, rosy in particular for the Magnificent Seven. They have completely held up the market. If we rewind 2 years ago, the Magnificent Seven made up about 20% of the S&P. Today, it's about 33%. And most of the weight of the growth of last year's market was those seven stocks. And the other 493 of those stocks, they performed, but not nearly as well. So you almost didn't get any lift whatsoever and from those other companies. So the question is, what if the kind of the question then is, if, okay, well, if you do get your rate cuts, they're all going higher. That's kind of my thesis to you. I think the way that I think your listeners might have a better insight versus just have some visuals too. Are you okay if we do show just a few quick slides just to kind of pinpoint where things are? So then they can kind of say, okay, well, if we go to slide 3 for me. So very simply at Invest With Rules, this came from the great work of Stan Weinstein's kind of pivotal book, The Secrets to How to Profit in Bull and Bear Markets. And I think the 4 stages make a massive amount of sense. So very simply, you have a stage 4 decline, which is what we all fear. And if we don't get any interest rate cuts, and if the market contracts, if we have slowing earnings, that's what we see in a year like 2022, where everything pulls back. A 2008, a dot-com, that's stage 4. If we kind of pull the stage 1, this basing pattern, that's when everything kind of bottoms and starts to turn. The short-term trend is up, the long-term trend is down. Everything golden happens in stage 2, this advancing phase. And then finally, you get this topping phase. So if we kind of pull back to the next slide, whether you're kind of more of a short-term minded investor or a longer-term minded investor, this is where it comes in. So our opinion is it's better to be on the sidelines, earn interest, protect your capital in stage 4 type environments. And if you're more of a shorter-term investor, then this is where you may even consider taking some off the table in these stage 3 environments. And that's kind of where we are with a few different asset classes. So if we think with our kind of our macro lens, and if we kind of pivot to slide 6, this is why the market's having so much trouble, where you have a short term, and we'll go 2-3 more for me, or 1 more for me, sorry, I apologize. We have a short-term and a long-term uptrend in the dollar. So there's fear. This is fear screaming that the inflation is getting worse. The expectations of 2025 are concern. If we do apply a lot of tariffs, if the dollar keeps getting stronger. So my expectation, I'm going to follow the trend, is the dollar's strong. The dollar's on what we'll call a gas signal, a short-term and long-term uptrend. If this breaks out, this market's in serious trouble. This current consolidation is going to kind of fall, and it's going to fall pretty hard. And I think I'll share with my last slide for you on this is if we go to slide 11 for me, this is the U.S. stocks. This would be my expectation for the S&P 500 still trading in a channel, but what if the market breaks from here? And what would that look like? So we have a long-term trend is still up. It's been up for a long time since 2023, but the very next slide will show where my expectations would be if we get this pullback in the market. So these are some recent consolidation periods. So this is from the all-time high. So the question to you and to your viewers is, okay, so let's say that inflation screams higher. We don't get the 4 rate cuts. This is what I would fear could be the challenge ahead of us. So possibly a negative 8% pullback. It could be as more of an actual correction, more than 10. And then finally, what if it really shocked and we come back down, test the 2021 highs, and that would be about a 24% pullback? I don't want to be a part of that, but that's my biggest concern to you.
So do you see this as more of a short-term pullback then? Because, you know, I feel like any time since 2008 that we've experienced some sort of pullback, some sort of, you know, pressure in the market, the Fed's conducted QE, whether that's, in 2020, we saw the massive amounts of money printing, rapid decline in interest rates. I feel this obviously is more speculation that when the Fed starts to feel, some sort of recessionary risks, they're not necessarily going to want to be like, hey, you know what, we'll just tank the market because it's going to be better in the long term. They're still going to be vying for those jobs. So they're going to say, okay, you know what? We'll put Band-Aid on this bleeding cut. We'll print more money. We'll lower interest rates. We'll have asset prices increase. And inflation will still run rampant. And then we get into this debt spiral that we can't get out of. Do you see that as a possibility too? Because, you know, it seems like if history tells us anything, it's that it's going to repeat. And historically, whenever we have some sort of fiat currency, you know, this is what happens to it. But this is an interesting one where this is the first time a fiat currency has been the global reserve currency. So do you think that that is a possibility here going forward?
Well, if history comes back to light, so it's possible. I would say that it's very possible. So the question mainly is like, what happens if we had our recession in 2022 and the market pulled back 20% and you've, in essence, the government has stimulated a lot more government jobs. There's been, call it 3 rate cuts. There has been massive liquidity from the Treasury. You now have a new Treasury chair coming in. So if inflation gets out of hand, then this is where a normalized kind of a growth plus inflation environment is typically great for stocks. It's great for real estate. It's great for Bitcoin. It's great for risk assets. And if that happens, this little consolidation of, we'll call it 5% today, it's not going to roll over. It's going to scream higher. And if it screams higher, then we are entering an environment where you're seeing, in essence, let's say the market does more than its earnings potential plus dividend, then you're looking at an environment where the multiple keeps increasing, your market's getting more and more expensive. And from a historical standpoint, the Magnificent Seven are deemed as already expensive in their own valuations today. So then you're looking at, could this get more expensive? So the answer is, it certainly can. And then you have this, you're absolutely right. The Fed could get trapped in an environment where they're lowering rates by 100 basis points, and yet the bond market says, I'm not having it. It goes up by 100 basis points. So it's almost like it's not working. So the question is, even if they do an extreme amount of liquidity, how will the bond market handle it? And I think about the one reason this could happen, I'll take a personal use, is in full disclosure, we run an advisory business. And today we help some amazing families. We run a little over $20 million. And we use some private AI solutions. So the question is, can AI make us more efficient? Can it add more growth to the economic engine? Obviously, it's kind of the way we use it today is it kind of politely hops on to our calls in a private setting. It doesn't share the data. So it gives me pre-appointment notes. It takes way better notes than I've ever taken in my, call it, 20 plus year financial advisor relationship. Then from there, it writes a decent version of a follow-up email for me. It creates beautiful compliance notes for my business. And the question is that saving my business some kind of expenses to be more efficient? And I think the answer to your question is, yeah. And it's going to add a lot more growth to the economy, and it's going to add a lot more productivity, and it's going to add a lot where we can actually grow at a faster pace. And is AI actually becoming a day-to-day use? So I'll turn to you. Is this world going to kind of go into this like explosive spiral of it gets stuck? It's possible, but I'd have to see. The short-term trend is now under pressure. If I saw the long-term trend of any asset class come under pressure, I'm out. I would rather deploy my capital in uptrends versus downtrends. And the answer to your question is so we're still long the stock market. We have a minimal position. We are diversified in our stock positions. We have a small position in things like Bitcoin. We have no fixed income. We have the smallest position you've ever seen in international stocks. We have, in particular, we have a flat position in Taiwan Semiconductor, the chip maker who is at the heart of AI. It's strange to think, but the consumer is still spending. And you're seeing things like airline stocks rocket. You're seeing things like, I'll take one example of one of our holdings or two of them, United Airlines rocketing in this environment. And you're seeing things like, even though energy is kind of coming back up, and you're seeing things like Viking Holdings, that cruise line internationally, we have a small position and it's going up. We don't own everything that's going up. Obviously, we play a lot of defense, but I would simply say that could the world implode into a debt spiral? It's possible, but if that happens, I will politely be in on the sidelines and heading towards things in uptrends and playing an awful lot of defense.
Well, then if you're in the sidelines there, Scott, I mean, I feel like in a debt spiral, it's going to be asset inflation, and then there's just going to be a lot of things that can't be explained in the market. You know, previously you cited PE ratios, price to earnings. I mean, that's a core value investing kind of, metric that a lot of people look at. And if you look at value investing over the past 15 years, call it, it's been getting absolutely hammered. I mean, we've seen like Warren Buffett start to go into more of the tech stocks. It seems like a lot of these previous metrics that were, you know, able to explain the stock market, were able to explain why certain stocks are going up, they're disappearing. It seems like a lot of what the stock market is right now, it's hard to explain. It's seeing things like NVIDIA. If you ask anybody about NVIDIA, and you know, you called it the Magnificent Seven, they're one of that Magnificent Seven now that's been really carrying the stock market here lately. You know, if you ask anybody about the traditional metrics to NVIDIA, everybody says it's going to crash. Everybody says, oh, it's overvalued, it's all this, it's all that. But if you sit on the sidelines for too long, you're missing out on all these gains here. So the reason I'm asking a lot of these questions is it seems like, you know, if the stock market to me is very much hard to explain because it doesn't make any sense. The numbers necessarily are not adding up. It seems like there's a lot of inflationary aspects that are lifting companies, and a lot of it is on speculation now. So is that going to be the future where people are going to speculate on AI? Because to me personally, that sounds like, hey, we're going to be in an AI bubble. Everybody's putting some sort of AI behind something, and that's making their stock skyrocket. So do you think that, you know, there's a possibility where, you know, in 2000, we saw the dot-com bubble, we saw the housing bubble in 08. I like to call it almost the crypto bubble that we saw in like early 2020, 2021, when all those were printing, we saw a bunch of companies go from zero to multi-billion dollar, valuations here in a very short period of time. And all these bubbles have gotten closer and closer and closer together. So I feel like, you know, AI is going to be that next one where every single person I talk to is like, hey, AI is going to be making us more efficient. But if you go to traditional banking, if you go to all these different places, they're still using Excel. They're not necessarily, you know, these forward thinking firms. They all move very slow. Big businesses move very slow. So I guess this is a long-winded answer to say, or a long-winded question to ask. You know, does that worry you in a sense of us potentially being in an AI bubble where this is the only explanation that you can really see for us going forward to continue that growth on the way up?
It's a great question. There's kind of two parts. So part one is AI in or heading to a bubble is what it sounds like is the question. And then the previous one is just a little bit around just kind of how do we get to such an expensive multiple where Warren Buffett is sitting in cash. His team is encouraging him to pick up technology companies like an Apple several years back. And now he's actually unloading those technology companies. If you mind moving to slide 13 for me, I think it will help explain it. At Invest With Rules, the market is incredibly challenging and hard. And very simply, what I want to share is we follow trend. And the way we do that primarily is through price momentum and relative strength. How are two things doing against each other? We codify that. We use kind of driving analogies for compliance. And very simply, green is great. It's a gas signal. And yellow is a coast, which means it's kind of a topping pattern. And we're red as we want to be really concerned. And if I look at the top we'll call it 15 mega cap companies in the S&P 500. So I hope this helps explain if the price keeps increasing and the momentum is still there, and yes, it's expensive, momentum, strength begets strength, it can keep going up. So all the way to the far right, you see things such as Broadcom, AVGO. It's still on a gas signal. It's still in a short-term and long-term uptrend. Things are great there. Google. I know Google has technically two parts, but Google is in a gas signal and an uptrend. Tesla is on a coast with its friends NVIDIA and Amazon and Visa, but there's still a bunch of green here. And the market's still screaming concentration at the top. In full disclosure, we have a position in Meta. We have a position in Amazon. We have a position in the basket, but we've shrunk our position down to a more moderately smaller sized allocation. But I think what's really interesting is all the way to the far left is the weakness in the market. And there's this little kind of interesting tug and pull where healthcare over the last several months has been miserable. And now you're finally seeing United Health Group come back. You're seeing things like Walmart acting extraordinarily strong. And they are the price matcher at the bottom. So if I were to say, where is my concern? My concern is something like a Microsoft in a short-term and long-term downtrend. Berkshire, maybe he's right, maybe he's wrong. But the answer right now is financials are under a little bit of pressure with steeply rising interest rates. So we do not own Berkshire stock at the moment. We do own some financial companies. But I would just simply say how we look at it is very quantitative. And if how I would kind of summarize, and I hope this is kind of hits the point, is if we get massive inflation and massive bull, then we're going to be these gas signals where price, momentum, relative strength are increasing. And the price is the marketplace. It does not lie. And at some point, they will go to coast and at some point down to break. That's what happened at the end of 2021 into 2022. At the moment, we're not really seeing that. So you're seeing a crack in Microsoft. You're seeing actually a crack in Exxon, but it's improving, which is interesting. So energy is improving, healthcare is improving, and you're seeing the interest rate sensitive areas such as utilities, real estate, consumer staples get clobbered these last couple of weeks. And still Walmart, obviously Walmart just keeps chugging along. It's the place where if times are tough, that's where people are shopping. That's where these huge funds, we track massive billion-dollar funds, that's where they go to hide. So I would just simply say that the price will tell us if we're paying attention. And yes, the price can get skyrocketing high, like in 2021, where the valuations are telling Warren Buffett to pull the cash, get out of this thing. And I always think it's kind of interesting where Warren Buffett has so much cash now that he could go out and buy pretty much every single NFL football team and own the entire organization. So it's that mind-boggling big of how much cash load he has and how much treasuries, short-term treasuries he probably owns. But I would say that at some point, the market's going to tip over and these trends will help us. It's just having a system, having a robust process.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting that the one caveat I have for all that is what you mentioned earlier with like AI, right? So if we're looking at Warren Buffett, his advantage previously was he had data, you know, not everybody did. He didn't have all the access to that. Now it seems like who can filter through that data, who can tell what data is full of it and what is actually truthful. And that's who's going to be able to find the alpha in the market. And half of it could be just looking at, hey, you know, I am seeing Trump say drill, baby, drill. That looks like it's going to be good for the energy markets. Let's throw a dart on a dartboard. And whichever one of those it hits, I'm going to invest in. Maybe it'll be the best performing one. Maybe it won't. So, I mean, I know it sounds like kind of a convoluted approach, but is this a kind of, you know, I guess a way you almost see the market going where you're looking at more of trends of industries opposed to looking at trends in companies? Because, you know, there's just so many of them now that, you know, it is kind of hard to sift through all of this different data. And you could pull a Warren Buffett where you're looking at something like Apple, say it's overvalued, but you just miss the overwhelming, you know, influence of tech that we've had coming forward. Obviously, he didn't miss it completely. He got in, but he did get in a lot later. So do you think that that's going to be, I guess, more of the path forward where it's looking at more of industries and trying to pick the winner in that industry opposed to necessarily, you know, looking at just overall market, looking at one specific company?
I think you can do both. And that's how we do it at Invest with Rules. So if I go with the basket approach, I'm going to start with the individual stock approach because it's a little bit more fun and more exciting. So at Invest with Rules, again, follow the trend, follow big money, follow risk management rules. So follow big money. We found this really unique research that exists, and there are these billion-dollar funds. At times, they're massive. And very simply, they report on a 30-day lag, very ethical data. And some of these funds that exist that we track and we cut through the data, we clean it, we deliver it to our members. And I do share an awful lot on Twitter, X, and wherever else I can, because I think it's so interesting personally. I've been fascinated by it for about a decade. And how it works is, let's say take a normal fund. Let's say they have 100 positions. Let's just say that as an example. And 33 they're buying, 33 they're holding, 33 and change they're selling. I want to know what they're buying, because when a fund is enormous, liquidity is really important, how much they can move in and out of the market. So how we do it is, as much as some days we think we're smarter than others, and some days we get the market likes to make a fool out of everybody. But I would simply say is, what are these funds buying? So if I take all the funds we track, we'll call it $1 trillion. Think of it like a super fund is how I mentally compartmentalize it. And I want to know, what stocks are they after? And what they typically do is they need to buy slowly, month after month, as they chip in and they chip out of some of their best names. So are they selling hard, or are they buying as much as they can get their hands on? Are they kind of doubling their share load? And that's how we identify individual stocks in AI that are the leaders. So as an example, Broadcom has been a company they've been after. Taiwan Semiconductor, a company they've been after. NVIDIA, a company they've been after. Now, they haven't been buying as much more recently. They've been kind of holding their position, so, which has been interesting, because their stock price has been more or less trading sideways, and their chip production seems to be on track. In theory, they're actually getting cheaper over time, because the price is staying steady, but the earnings growth is actually increasing. So phase one at Invest with Rules, if we're going to be buying individual stocks, we need the tidal wave behind us. I call it a tidal wave that acts like a sloth, because they need to buy slowly, and it's a ton of money. So what we do is we simply go after the AI tickers or whatever the funds are after. And sometimes Warren's there. So I know he used to have a position in Amazon. He hasn't sold that down. We have a position at Amazon. He might be late to the party like usual, but he's never terribly wrong. I mean, he bought Apple when Apple was more of a consumer staple. So you have your iPhone. They have an incredible way of having you buy another iPhone and then buying a Mac and then buying an iPad. And that's the kind of the ecosystem that Warren Buffett's after, where he can, in theory, do buybacks, raise prices, and go after things. But in general, when it comes to stocks, I want to see the funds buying. When it comes to trends and baskets, I use ETFs or these exchange traded funds. And I think a really good picture today, which kind of solves the energy question, is how would I play energy if I don't see the funds buying energy stocks? If you go to slide 17 for me, here is an example of, I don't own it, but I'm watching it incredibly closely. This is a basket of oil pipeline companies. So Drill Baby Drill is on slide 17. I apologize to make you move there. So there it is. So AMLP is your ticker. Again, mind your risk. Think of it as oil kind of goes through pipelines. They receive a royalty. And very simply, this is a basket of companies that are in the oil pipeline space. It's in a short-term and long-term uptrend, which is exactly what we want to see. Could you, in theory, find the best company or just simply buy the basket? So this is a very pretty weekly chart of oil pipelines. if you, let's just say it moves sideways, it has a 7.5% yield. So this is the type of a ticker through our programmatic kind of system that says your attention should be on something like this. As the market's kind of moving sideways and down, this is kind of moving sideways and up. So if you're going to be buying baskets, this is the type of action that we would be looking at from a trend and momentum approach. Oil pipelines, this is where the big money is going. Can you figure out which is the best one? Possibly. Our research is still showing there's still, the funds are still going after more of the growthier part of the world, more of that NASDAQ top type of NASDAQ stocks type of area. But I'll stop there. So I would say that this would be a basket type approach. And if you're looking for, and lo and behold, Warren Buffett's buying Occidental Petroleum. There you go. So so this is how the invest with rules process kind of pulls all the pieces together and then say, okay, well, which stocks do we go after?
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's an interesting approach. So I'm going to put you on the spot here, Scott. Nice. If you had to make a prediction about where we end up in the stock market by the end of the year. Now, of course, obviously, we're not going to hold you drastically to this. Everything that you hear is not financial advice or everything. But, you know, in 2020, we saw the S&P up 20%. Last year, we saw it up 25%. Do you see us having another record year in the S&P? Just because of everything that we've lined out here, the potential of lowering interest rates. Obviously, it has a couple factors, whether Powell can keep his foot down and whatnot. But I know you're a little cautionary here right now. So do you think that we might not have as bullish of a year in the S&P that we've had the past, call it 4 or 5 years?
It's a great question. And I like to watch macro podcasts. I like to listen to yours. I like to listen to some of the big ones out there. And I always have an opinion, but I always backtrack into the price. And my answer to you is, at the moment, we're in a topping phase. I'm cautious. Where could we be in the next 12 months? My take is, I would be shocked if the Trump administration doesn't figure out a way to lower the US dollar. And if they can figure a way how to, whether that be through trade or whether that be through a little bit of polite manipulation, but if they can lower the US dollar at some point in this calendar year, then I would say that we're probably looking at an environment at the back half of this year where the market is significantly higher than it is today. So could we get the 10% earnings growth, maybe almost 12% earnings growth, plus a dividend, plus a little bit of an extra juice, because we're going to be seeing, again, more economic growth, but more inflation. So if they can figure a way, keep inflation quasi-moderate from a rate of change standpoint, if they can lower the dollar, then I would expect a very strong year, let's say in the neighborhood of 10 to 15%. That would not shock me. Are we going to see a year like last year where the market did, again, the Magnificent Seven in particular, did about 20-ish, 24% growth? That's primarily from multiple expansion. And that was on the hope of lowering interest rates. So I don't see it as strong as the past 2 years. And I see it shifting. And I see it moving into other areas. And typically, strength begets strength. So it wouldn't shock me to see areas like tech continue to do well despite this pullback. It would not shock me to see areas come back to life that typically do well in this type of an environment, like financials or industrials or things as the Trump administration tries to pull more companies back into the United States. So that's where I would think it's going to be more of a commodity-led economy. And that's what I'm seeing on my screens. It's energy, it's gold, it's physical commodities are right in my face. And I can't deny the fact that because of this little increase in inflation, you're seeing more of a bent towards hard physical commodities that could increase more than the US stock market.
Yeah, so it seems like the hard assets, right? I mean, that's what everybody always wants to point to in an inflationary environment. So is that what you're kind of, I guess, seeing in a sense? It's the traditional, so to speak, inflation hedges are going to be the way in 25.
Well, right now, math data says your attention needs to be on gold. Your attention needs to be on oil. Those are the two that are the remaining large asset classes still on gas signals, meaning short-term and long-term uptrends. What's in a wait-and-see pattern? Please don't take this in any negative. Bitcoin, it's in a short-term pullback. Long-term still looks perfectly fine. So in your world, this would probably be the world's... long-term, nothing's wrong, but short-term, you're in a pullback. The S&P 500 on a coast. So Bitcoin on a coast. S&P 500 on a coast. The other things on a coast, now on a break, where I'm really concerned that I don't have very much, if any, deployed, international and bonds. So the market's screaming at me, hey, do you have enough and should you be adding oil? And do you have enough gold? And we still have a position in Bitcoin, in full disclosure, and we have a position in gold. And do we need to be adding more commodity-based investments that are maybe tied to the drill baby drill simply based on momentum and relative strength? I think you're on mute. I apologize.
My bad. I lost the tab for a second. But Scott, you've been very generous with your time. I've been putting you on the spot here a little bit. So I appreciate you coming in with some great answers and all the things along those lines. So why don't you tell people where they can find out more about you and more about Invest With Answers?
Yeah. So if you go to investwithrules.com, I provide a free S&P 500 ticker tool. And very simply, so if you want to know, are we in short-term or long-term uptrends or downtrends, investwithrules.com. I do produce an awful lot of complimentary material. I try once a week to provide a nice email that provides a general understanding of where we are. For if you felt you were looking for more, very simply, I do provide an awful lot to members in regards to a total look over the shoulder live sheet experience where you can see we are going after uptrends. We're following the trend. We're following big money. We're going after stocks specifically that these funds are buying. That's probably the most exciting part. So if you kind of go under the macro hood of what are the funds buying and what are they kind of letting go and where are we avoiding? And then finally, last but not least, if you're like, this is interesting, I want to know even more, but I don't have the time. Again, I would say start with Invest With Rules, see if you like our thesis and our thinking, and then we can go from there.
All right. Awesome stuff. And I'll put all of that in the show notes. So Scott, thanks so much for joining the show and thanks for your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Brandon, have an awesome time in Medellin and I hope it's an awesome conference. Thanks for having me. It was an absolute pleasure.